Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Welcome, dear listener. How are you? As you can probably hear, I have a head cold, along with loads of other people that I know at the moment. It's just that time of year, the seasonal switch over. I know that I'll reap that sense of renewal once I feel better, and I don't know about you, but a good rest when you're ill allows you to sink deeply into your dreams, which is always of benefit. Big autumnal hugs to my curious crew, and I'll be sending out a date for a Discord group chat, which will take place in the next week or so. A special welcome also to our new curious enchanter, Amy. Thank you for joining us. I'll be releasing a bonus episode for all patrons who want to follow my exploration into tea ceremonies. This is going to be my first go at making a patron-only video, so that should be fun. I'll probably wait until I'm feeling a bit better in a few days, so that will be sometime over the next week that I'll release that on Patreon. If you listened to the last episode, Awakening to Them, then you'll have heard our guest talk about the power of sacred teas in connecting with beings from the other world. For me, it feels like a good time to make this journey in this liminal space of the year as we descend into darkness and also perhaps coming out of illness. I'm so grateful for my dear curious crew and all their ongoing support. It brings me ever closer to devoting more time to this project. Join us if you feel drawn at patreon.com/themodernfairysightingspodcast, where you'll get access to some bonus episodes and other sorts of material there. And you get to speak to each other and just join in just a lovely community of really amazing people who are just a great bunch to be with, really. I had many comments after that last episode, and it seemed to really resonate with listeners. This connection between fairy experience and what appear to be communications with beings from elsewhere in the universe, the vibe being more akin to alien or UFO experience. It was really wonderful to receive all your messages, and you know I love hearing from you, so please do get in touch and tell me your thoughts on these matters. You can message me at scarletofthefae.com, tweet me at @remain_curious, and I'm also on Instagram at @remaincurious. This episode covers another good old chat with a woman living in Wales. We discuss her encounter with a green man, her experience of viewing the gentry pass near her house, and other extraordinary experiences. It really amazes me how many people have had something extraordinary take place in their life. It feels like the majority of people can report at least one strange happening. The world is a mysterious place, let's not forget that. There's so much more going on here than we generally take for granted. I hope you enjoy this wonderful share. Time to
So, not long after I moved to Wales, I don't know if you can remember, a shop called Past Times used to sell cute fairy figures. And I'd moved from London, where everyone, it was very cool, and you absolutely didn't talk about fairies. But I'd always really secretly quite liked these little statues, and they were on sale, and I thought, I'm just going to buy them. So I bought some little fairy statues of the figure of a woman or a young girl looking over and looking down on them. And I put them in the garden, and I put them on a piece of wood chip that had been down for several years. And within a week, in front of them, two fairy rings had grown of mushrooms.
Wow.
Which was not a mushroom before that. And suddenly these two fairy rings came. After about a year, we were going to do some building work. So I moved the statues and I put them in a large planter, and I stuck a solar light in the middle just to get more out of the way of builders. And we had that hurricane, which brought trees down.
That was 87, right?
It must have been then. And a tree came down and it pretty well missed our house, but it left a tree across the garden. It had missed the planter, but it was next to the planter. And I opened the curtains late at night just to see, because it's still quite windy, put the outside light on and said, "Night, night, fairies." Switched the light off and the solar light went on and went off again. I thought, that's funny. So I put the light on again, the outside light, and looked at the pot with the fairies singing. And I thought, I'll try this again. So I said, "Night, night, fairies." And I switched the light off. And again, the solar light went on and went off. And I thought, oh, I know what's happened. The light has actually, the light from the house has triggered the solar light.
Yeah.
In the morning, though, I went and I checked the solar light. Not only was it off, but actually it turned out it was broken.
Oh.
So that was the first time that I thought, oh, that's odd. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, I don't know what fairies actually are. And that was when I started kind of being curious about fairies. Mm. And I was doing some training as a therapist at a time, and the people I trained worked with fairies. And I just found this really, I just found this actually really difficult because I didn't really know what they were.
Mm.
And, of course, the fairies they were talking about were much more human in appearance. Well, they weren't, but they weren't the pretty little fairies of stories.
Oh, okay.
And they were very different in nature. And so I started to have to come to terms with, well, what I do when I'm working with these beings has an effect, but I don't know what these beings are. Mm. And probably the second time I came across them, I was sitting underneath a tree. We had an old rough pasture up the road from us, and it had some large oak trees in it. And sometimes I'd just go and sit up there just to be quiet or to meditate or just because it was pleasant. And this again, when I say I saw, I don't often see things in the flesh, but and usually I see things in my mind's eye because that's, you know, that's the way I see energy, I suppose. It's the mind's eye and your imagination that gives shape to an energetic form.
Mm.
And I saw, and I was trying to remember what this place would have been. What was this rough pasture like? What would it have been in times past? What would people have done there? And I saw this procession of people in medieval clothes. And I thought, they're not people. They look like fairy folk. And I was so surprised, and I just said, why are you dressed like that? Because they were dressed in classic medieval lord and lady garbs with velvet clothes, rich colours.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, this is how we looked the last time that people saw us.
Right.
And I thought,
that's interesting.
It was interesting, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. That's all I can remember of that particular encounter.
Mm.
They just carried on and left.
Do you know how big they were? Can you remember how big?
People sized.
Oh, amazing. And what were their faces like? Do you know?
People. They absolutely looked like people. I just knew they weren't people.
Mm.
And yes, yeah, so to go back to the gentleman in green that we talked about, I was digging the garden and I kind of became aware that someone was looking at me in the way you do when someone looks at you. And the other side of the garden fence, there was a small man who had purple trousers and I was surprised at how bright his purple trousers were. And he was, I suppose, like a classic curly brown haired, rosy cheeks, stocky, probably no more than 3 foot high, if that. And he was just looking at me quizzically. And so I kind of stopped digging. I looked at him and I bowed because I thought, well, I need to be polite because I have a healthy respect for anything from the world of fae. And he kind of then just vanished. But over the next few weeks, inside the house, things kept going missing. They kept going round. And I'd get flashes of purple out of the corner of my eye. And I thought, I wonder if this person has actually come in. And so I sat down very quietly and did a kind of meditation journey. And sure enough, there he was. And I just said, you have to go. You don't really have permission to be in the house. Thank you for coming in, but you need to leave. And he did. And I never saw him again.
Yeah. So he was probably around 3 foot or less. And what kind of vibe did you get off him?
I've tried to remember this. And it was more that he was curious. I don't think he was... certainly wasn't malicious, wasn't anything like that. He was just curious. So I was quite surprised that he was being so kind of mischievous in the house. There wasn't anything.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything. It was just very inconvenient. So it wasn't anything bad. It was just, and yeah, I mean, he didn't even look like a mischievous being when I saw him. He was just... there. He was just there.
Yeah, and so he had purple trousers on.
That's the main thing that startled me, because I kind of would have thought he would have had like greens and browns, and but he didn't. Bright purple.
Yeah, and have you ever seen any images that look like him since? Anything that looks, that you've seen, you've thought, oh yeah, that's quite similar. Was he kind of Froudian or?
To be honest, I haven't really looked. And the Froudian things that I've seen, and again, I haven't seen many of them, all look really quite ugly. And I haven't seen many ugly fairies or beings.
So he just had a kind of normal proportioned... I say normal.
Stocky. Human. He was definitely stocky, and he had curly dark hair, and he would have been perhaps more weather beaten.
Yeah, on his skin.
Yeah,
his skin.
But not. You would. So I suppose actually the closest thing that I might think might be a leprechaun, except that you don't get them in this country apparently. But that sort of thing would be. Actually, I don't know what leprechauns are meant to look like either.
I know, it's that image of the leprechaun has been so done, hasn't it? And
yeah.
Extracted from
what? There's a reason.
Yeah, yeah. What sort of things would go missing? Can you remember?
Oh, they were just household, like keys and actually bits of the house wouldn't work. That was the, you know, like the boiler would break down. So it wasn't anything serious. It was just irritating. But I think things breaking down was the final straw.
Yeah, because I don't know if you read, so the latest episode that went out last night, there was there's some show notes that go along with that, and then... they describe a couple who moved into a house in the late 1980s, and the previous occupants had told them, oh, there's some brownies in the garden, they help out, they sometimes help in the house. So these new people moved in, and you know, they didn't know anything about fairies, and first of all, they found that they were getting help, like the washing would be transferred to the tumble dryer or would be hung up and all this kind of thing.
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to read it.
I haven't, no.
So he didn't help out in any way. Did he help at all in the garden or?
No, not as far as I know, no.
No, because it's interesting that you were sort of digging in the garden. Do you remember what you were working on when he turned up in the garden?
No, it was just digging the vegetable patch.
Yeah.
And he definitely didn't help with that.
No. He was more interested in coming into the house.
Well, yes, and I can't, yes, and it was a bit like, my feeling was that by speaking to him, I'd given him permission to come in. Mm. And of course I hadn't, but he'd taken it as permission. The house was energetically very active. I can only put it like that.
Right. Was it quite an old house?
Yes, it was. And it was built on two quite strong lines of energy, and I would never have put a building on there ever, but it was. So I learnt to douse, and that's what I doused, and had lots of actually also water going round and under it.
Yeah, that can definitely attract a lot of energy. Did other things happen in the house then?
Yes, not too good for us. We didn't have a very good time there. But, it's fine.
Well, the end of the story with the with this couple that moved into a house was that the brownie had moved something, and it kind of basically she just got really irritated with it in the end and got very fed up, and then chaos ensued. I think some washing powder got strewn all over some vegetables, jam got smeared into her Persian rug. Just, you know, like you say, things would break, taps would break and things like that. And in the end, they had to move out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. No, it wasn't anything like that. It was, it's more things like my husband got cancer.
Oh, gosh.
We have constant financial problems and... They would kind of get better after I did a bit of kind of remedial work, and then they would just, it was just very unstable. It's a very unstable feeling house. And I don't think that was necessarily, in fact, I think, since we've talked, I've had a very recent experience of a house dwelling being, very recent. And I think it's much more to do with energetic vortexes and places that allow, either within ourselves or within the land, that allows a crossing of beings from one place to another.
Mm.
I don't know if you've come across that before.
I think, well, my feeling is that they're drawn to emotion. So when I had mine, very, very similar to yours, I'd just met my husband and, we were dating at that point, and we went somewhere to watch the sun go down, and we were in an embrace, and it was a very sort of potent attraction between us. And I think that that's what drew the fairy, because all of a sudden I turned round. My husband was looking the other way. I turned round and I just saw this small green man. He was about 2.5 to 3 foot tall. He was just all different shades of green and the kind of archetypal, the old fashioned trousers and jacket. And he had some kind of hat, which I can never remember what it looked like. And he wasn't smiling and he wasn't scowling, but he just looked at me and I looked at him. And it was this kind of intense, looking at each other. But my feeling that I got from it was just that he wanted me to see him.
That, if you put purple trousers on that, that's what I saw.
Yeah.
I don't remember being particularly, having a particularly strong feeling at the time, though.
No.
But I might well have done, because, as I say, that house was quite up and down for us.
So the rest of him was green, apart from the purple trousers, is that right?
No, but that kind of feeling that you've described, of that archetypal man with the traditional, like the corduroy waistcoaty type thing.
Yeah.
That, the way you described him is how I would have described this man, but I definitely just remember that he had purple trousers and they were very bright.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? The purple. Yeah. And I wonder if other people have seen different colours, because I know sort of reds and greens. People often see reds and greens.
Right.
I have seen a red man once, but that was not with my eyes open. That was with I used to go and meditate in this forest, and I used to sort of haul myself up onto a rock where a yew tree was growing from, and I would sit on the rock under the yew tree away from everybody, so no one could really sort of see you were there. And I used to meditate there and become part of the wood, become part of the forest through that sort of deep meditation. And I did see a little red man that time. It's not as clear, because the time with the green man was just so unmistakable, and you know, he was meters away from me when he appeared. And the red man that I saw was, you know, through meditation, and he was just in the same part of the forest that I was in. Didn't really get much more detail than that, but certainly
the yew trees are an interesting tree to meditate under.
Yes, because they give off psychedelic. Well, it's poison, isn't it? But it can have psychedelic, hallucinogenic properties. Even just the leaves, never mind the berries. Just being under the leaves themselves apparently can induce. I want to hop in here and remind folks that yew trees are highly poisonous, and ingesting their berries or leaves can be fatal. Even the bark itself, the tree itself, is poisonous, which is why it was once used for arrowheads. So please, please, please bear that in mind when dealing with yew trees. I was sitting beneath one, but I was always making sure that I never ingested any needles by mistake, and I would certainly not even touch the berries, even though it's the seeds themselves that are poisonous and toxic, highly toxic, and as I say, fatal potentially. Just bear that in mind and do not mess with the yew.
They're energetically, in kind of the ways that I've learned about them, they are a link between one world and another.
Yes.
So It's just, because I don't know, it's just something that I was wondering whether it was, whether there are ways in which that meeting of the two worlds are facilitated, and
yeah,
what particular energetic spots allow us to see more clearly things we can see normally.
I would definitely agree with that. I think there's lots of different factors involved. The main thing that I think helped me to see, maybe rather than them see me, but I felt also attracted them, was this intense love that my husband and I, you know, we just met and we were in the first throes of love. We're very, very close, and we always were. And I think that had a big factor. The other thing was that it was twilight. We'd gone there to watch the sun go down. The other thing was that it was next to a Neolithic dolmen. So...
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, it was about...
Summerland.
Yes. So
have you
ever
journeyed underneath those?
I have. I've worked quite a lot with dolmens and had some quite interesting experiences. But this, it was probably about 50 metres away from the dolmen. He appeared just either in front of or behind a fallen log. You know, it was like a log, a fallen tree, but it was just a log, quite a large log. And so it wasn't right next to the dolmen, but it was obviously on a ley line. And that area itself, there's been loads of UFO sightings around there. And in fact, people just say they often just sit on the balconies and watch the UFOs, you know, the lights in the sky, strange lights in the sky. So there is a lot of activity around there. So, yeah, I do believe that there are these places where the veil is very thin. I mean, I don't know if you heard that the episode about the tall folk and the little people.
Okay.
That is a really, oh, they're all my favourites, really. But I love that one, and it took place in Ireland next to a dolmen, and I think you'd really enjoy that. And he just had such an incredible experience. But what do you think? How do you make sense of it? As in, what do you think fairies are? And how do you think that they come to manifest, or that we are able to see them?
Okay, well, I'll partly answer that by the most recent experience that I've had. So my husband, for a few nights running, at the moment we're in separate rooms because I had a really bad, I was being awake a lot at night, and anyway, for whatever reason we were. So he was waking up in the night, and he was he's kind of watched my progress and gone from being a complete skeptic to having had experiences himself. And the way he picks things up, particularly in the middle of the night, is he just gets waves and waves of chills and feelings of fear sometimes, and feelings that there's something there. Occasionally, it has been when friends of his have died. But this most recent one, there was something that he couldn't identify. He knew there was something there. He knew it wasn't very nice, and he couldn't get rid of it. So he was telling me about it in the morning. So I said, okay, I'll have a look. And it was the room he was in had a really not very nice feel. So I thought, well, it's likely there's something there, but I actually couldn't see it. And sometimes when I can't see something, it's because it knows and it's avoiding me. So I had to find a friend who deals with these things. And he said, well, it'll be from the fairy world. You need to contact your fairy guide and ask them to deal with it. So I did do a journey to meet the fairy guide. And he showed me what was there, and it was a proper classic nakedy goblin thing. And it was really horrible, really not a very nice thing to have in a house. You wouldn't want it there. So I said, could you please remove it? It's not allowed in the house, so I don't give it permission to be there. And the fairy guide said, okay. So he got the goblin, and the goblin kind of slunk off down the road, almost muttering as it went. But then the guide said, actually, this is connected with some work that you should have done 3 years ago. Because I'd been told, I used to go to the shamanic conference. Well, I have been every year until last year. And he said, you should have done some work after the conference because there's a problem with a space at the top of your road. And it's a confluence of two small streams, so it wouldn't be surprising if it was a significant place. And it's in a very wooded valley full of oak trees. So I said, oh, yeah, I have been thinking about it, but I actually couldn't face it. And he said, well, you need to do that work now. And the work was to enable, and it was kind of like a really chaotic vortex that had trapped a lot of people who had died from a long time ago. They died in violent circumstances, presumably in skirmishes, because that's what happens. And they were stuck in this vortex, and it was a vortex that had allowed the goblin to come through. So that's what made me start to think, well, perhaps it is these points of energy. If you have a point of energy and it's not tended by people, for example, under a standing stone, that standing stone was put in a particular place, and ceremony was done to use the energy of that place. And when the people who tended it die, the energy doesn't go away. The energy is a neutral thing, and it will take on the color of what's around it. So in some places where the standing stones have been taken up or it's been built on, you'll find that there are places which still have a lot of energy, but they've taken on very negative energy from people that surround them because people have a lot of negative energy. And presumably, in this case, there had been some sort of skirmish and people had died, and that negative energy associated with those deaths and anger was there and had kind of created this thing that had allowed a transfer of a goblin and had kept these souls stuck where they were. And so I had to close that. I had to move those people on, and the goblin went. And since then, there hasn't been any recurrence of any untoward nighttime visits. Or actually, also, this house had a lot of things breaking down, and it makes me wonder how long that had been a problem.
But it's much better now.
Oh, yeah, much better now. Yeah, yeah. So that's what made me wonder about the vortex. Or the kind of, not the vortex, but those points of energy that allow a shifting between two states.
There does definitely seem to be, there do definitely seem to be places where people see fairies, you know, different, completely different individuals at different times, and they will be seen in certain places. So it does feel like there's something in certain landscapes. And yeah, I have thought about vortexes and points of energy in the landscape. That does seem to make sense to me. And just thinking back also to when you saw your purple trousered man, can you remember if anything was going on for you in your life at the time?
No, I have thought about that, and I really can't. Particularly, I mean, I found early motherhood quite difficult, but I can't actually think that it was a particular thing.
Yeah.
And I probably was in a slightly meditative state if I was gardening.
Digging, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't remember that I was in a time of turmoil particularly. I don't associate it with that.
No. Did you enjoy gardening?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Mm. It goes, yes, given that, you know, you plant something and something eats it, not usually me.
Yeah, because I think that's sometimes another way that you attract them is when you're doing something that you really love. You know, you're giving yourself fully into an act, you know, whether it's gardening or reading or singing or whatever it is. And did life change at all for you afterwards?
No, apart from the irritation of the house thing. There was a very intense day when something happened. It's not particularly fairy related. I'd had a very, very, very stressed time, and I was looking forward to doing a printing class. And at the last minute, the printing class was cancelled, and I was really, really upset. I've rarely been more upset of kind of having this time away and time out doing something. And I went for a walk. And outside, there was a proper storm raging. I mean, really high winds, howling. And I just didn't care. I thought, I'm going for a walk. I need to get out because I will break things if I don't. And I went out. And as soon as I went down the drive, and as soon as I got onto the little lane, the wind just stopped. And I could see that it was kind of still going, but it was as if I was in this bubble. And I walked in silence all the way up the lane and into a wood. And I was kind of thinking, well, shall I go into the wood? Because I know the storm is there, but it's just so quiet. So I thought, well, I'll risk it. And I walked through the wood and I walked down by the river. And it was kind of, it was a very, very strange stillness. It wasn't a normal stillness. I went down to the river, and all the way by the river, in this very small kind of flat bit by the river, there was an entire disarticulated skeleton of a heron and feathers.
Gosh.
A few weeks before, I'd been given a heron as a spirit guide. And so I collected the bones and the feathers. I made my way back to the house. And the second that I got back to the drive, the storm hit again. Full on, violent storm. So it was as if I'd stepped into a kind of parallel world.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And I'd been given this gift. And then as soon as I got it and got home, then the whole storm kicked off again.
Yeah.
And I remember the feeling of being literally in a bubble of protection around from with the storm outside, myself inside. And I couldn't feel the wind. I couldn't hear the storm. It was very odd. And it was just still, you know, it was still around me. It wasn't like I'd lost my senses. It was just like it being out of time.
I mean, that is really fascinating. And I think because you work so closely, you're obviously sort of working with shamanic methods and you're used to communing with the land and working with the land. You have a real connection with your own sense of deep spirituality as well. So you have this connection to the deep self, and you can connect with landscape in the same way. I feel like it does open the door much more easily to these kind of extraordinary experiences. That sounds like, I would say that as an extraordinary experience.
Yes, it was. It was something that I do remember quite vividly because it was so odd.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of activity around there. I think you would really love this book, Greening the Paranormal, because it talks about how Indigenous people connected with the landscape as well, and you know, continuing cultures and how they are trying to speak to scientists and the rest of the world to you know, to talk of their relationship with
absolutely the earth. unless we learn to see the landscape as an animate thing.
Yes, exactly.
So I would say I'm probably, if I'm anything, I am an animist. Unless we do look at the natural, the world outside as being having its own sentience,
a person
needing respect,
exactly,
we will never change, because we will just go on using it and destroying it, and that's kind of going to impact very negatively on ourselves unless we change how we behave as a species.
It's true. Thank you so much. That's been really great to talk to you. It's really, really fascinating. I hope that you get some nice weather down there to get back out in the garden. Time to It was really great to hear from our guest. Thanks so much to her for sharing her experiences. The Green Man in the Garden is another example of a fairly mundane appearance by the fair folk. He suddenly turns up when she's least expecting it, and she deals with his visitation in a very matter-of-fact way, remembering to honour him with a respectful nod. I wonder how long he'd been watching her for. And it's always difficult to remember exactly what was going on at certain points in our lives, but was there a trigger for it? We're not entirely sure. It's true to say that our guest and her family had had a series of misfortunes at the house. Did he come to help? Or did the same earth energy which affected the house also allow his manifestation to take place? The house itself was thought to be built on two strong lines of energy, with water running around it and potentially underneath it, and our guest remarks that the house should never have been built there. There are many different cultural practices which understand and work with lines of energy. Chinese geomancy feng shui works with features such as water and mirrors to improve the flow of energy or life force within buildings and landscapes. The concept of ley lines, as named by early 20th century archaeologist Alfred Watkins, is also now well known as lines which cross the globe like rivers of energy, intersecting with sacred monuments at times. As Paul Devereux describes in his book Spirit Roads and Exploration of Otherworldly Routes, fairies also had their own routes through the landscape which you'd be well advised to steer clear of. Even in the early 20th century in Ireland, people were still very careful about fairy paths whenever homes or extensions were being built, and of course they still are in terms of where roads are built, and this still goes on. There are plenty of articles which appear in contemporary papers up to the present day about rerouting roads to avoid fairy thorns. Obstructing these paths could result in bad luck or illness for the family, and sometimes even poltergeist energy in the home. There were various methods of putting this right, as advised by local wise women, such as filling up the two side doors and opening alternative doors, or ensuring that windows remained open at night to permit the onward journey of the fairies. To avoid antagonising fairies in the first place, tradition held that you should place stones or sticks at the four corners of the intended building spot overnight and see if they remained there in the morning. If they had been clouted over by protesting fairies, then you'd be wise to pick another spot. On recognising a series of incidents in her home shortly after their meeting, our guest was very clear and firm with her visitor. She politely asked that he leave. "I'm a great believer in this sort of direct communication. Don't concern yourself too much in following a particular procedure. I'm not personally a fan of dogma. Just be honest, work with respect and integrity, and most importantly, be clear about your intentions." The sighting of the gentry was a more meditative episode, but one which was striking and reminds me of an entry in Dermot McManus's The Middle Kingdom. In 1932, an old woman told of her experience when, just a young 18-year-old, she was in service as a maid at a big house in Longford. On her afternoon off one summer's day, she and some other girls were sitting not far from the avenue gates when they heard the clatter of horsemen coming along the road. She jumped up at once, saying she must hurry back to the house as there was quality coming and her help would be needed. She had not run far when the party of riders came in sight, 8 of them, men and young women in bright clothes and with coloured bridles and saddles, the girls aside, the men astride, and all laughing and talking gaily. They were no more than 40 yards from her when they swung to the right over a grassy bank, across a small field, and into the side of a small, thorn-ringed fairy fort. Horses and all, they trotted into the earth as coolly and casually as humans would pass through a stable gate. So she shrugged her shoulders and went back to her companions. When asked why she had returned, she replied, "Ah, 'twas no quality at all, 'twas only a pack of fairies going into the fort." Great story, and that is from Dermot McManus, The Middle Kingdom. I'm going to place a link to that recommendation in the show notes at scarletofthefae.com. I'd really love to hear from any listeners who've seen the gentry in this guise, the Lord and Lady garb. And I should add, please only ever share your stories if it feels right to do so. So for some people it never does feel right, and you need to pay attention to that. But for others there's a sense that their stories should be shared, and as long as it feels absolutely right to do so, then do get in touch. I hope you enjoyed this episode. As I say, I've added that recommended reading to the show notes. So as always, scarletofthefae.com if you want to get in touch or read the show notes. Please do share with one friend whom you think might enjoy these episodes, and do subscribe and rate the show, whichever app you're listening on. Also, just keep in touch and tell me what you'd like to hear. These episodes are created with love by those who are willing to share, and I'm honoured to be able to provide a space for them. If you're hearing these and they ring true with your own experiences, then I'm so glad, as that's exactly the hope for this project. If they seem like a distant wonder from your own perspective of reality, then welcome to you also. The open-hearted nature of this project encourages us all to remain curious.